Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. The Be Fulfilled Journal helps you be more honest with yourself and with others and be more open to handling things you've avoided dealing with for years. It's a 12-week online and journal program that helps you identify and eliminate things you do that are causing you stress and live in more gratitude and joy. It was actually developed by a long-term friend of mine who got sober in 2008, and he's put together a great deal just for my listeners. You get the 300-page hardcover journal and access to the 12-week video program online, plus free shipping, plus membership in a private Facebook support group with others going through the program, plus a 5-day mini course showing you how to let go of stuff that's draining your energy, plus a 30-day 100% money-back guarantee. To start your journey and get all the bonuses, go to befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. That's befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And I have such a nice guy. We're here with Ace Von Johnson today from LA Guns and Faster Pussycat. Really sweet guy. Very interesting. He does a lot of things. Not only just a great guitar player, he's got a lot of interest outside of music that we'll talk about. And just want to give a quick shout out to Kevin Cipriano for connecting us. Thanks, Kevin. So a little bit about Ace. Born and raised in Southern California. Started touring professionally at age 19. Cut his teeth early on the punk rock scene in LA. He was recording and touring with bands like Cheap Sex, Madcap, Murphy's Law, and veteran skateboarder Dwayne Peters bands The Gunfight and The US Bombs. Later, he'd branch out into other genres, working with groups like Americana and outlaw country act Charlie and the Valentine Killers for their debut album, and pop artist Shanti Wintergate on her Stranger Days album. In 2010, Ace joined legendary Sunset Strip rockers Faster Pussycat as their lead guitarist, and he started doing session work with Grammy-winning producer Theron. Is that right? Theron or Theron?
I don't know. They just call him Nephew.
Nephew. Great. That's so much easier. Nephew Feimster for the posthumous Michael Jackson album called Michael. Since then, he's been steadily on tour with Faster Pussycat, doing an average of 80 shows a year. From 2013 to 14, he found time to play for San Diego radio rock band Unwritten Law, as well as becoming the MD, the music director, and guitarist for Massachusetts' renowned music horror convention called Rock and Shock. And that group features a revolving lineup every fall with members of The Misfits, Lamb of God, Joan Jett, and more. He's been a featured regular at two of Hollywood's monthly high-profile events. One is Ultimate Jam Night, and the other is Soundcheck Live. Do you play with Jason Orme at Soundcheck Live? I think Jason was doing that, wasn't he?
I know that name, but I don't think I've played with him.
I think he was doing Soundcheck Live for a while. And he's been seen performing with members of other bands like Nine Inch Nails, Heart, Guns N' Roses, and many others. From networking at these events, you don't really seem like a networker, man. You just seem like a good guy who goes out there and plays. I don't know why. Who writes these? Fuck.
I think a friend of mine wrote that, and then I went in and worded it a little differently. I hate bios.
I know. It's like
how do you write about yourself? Like, well, I did all these things. How do I tell people that, you know, without sounding like an asshole?
Yeah, no, you sound like great. You just be yourself. This is from networking at these events and friendships. Anyway,
I mean, that's basically it. You know, you do a jam. It's like the guy, you know, someone goes, "Hey, man, we had fun with you. You should come."
Yeah.
So and so is auditioning somebody or whatever.
And from that, he sat in with, he started playing with LA Guns, Vixen, Adler, which of course is Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses band, and many others. In the fall of 2016, he appeared in three promotional videos for Our Man, Brother Latham from Bisto Blanco, which I interviewed Chris, who's a great guy, several months ago, and he was playing bass. Ace was playing bass for them. At the same time, he began working and recording with a project of his own called Neon Coven, and we'll talk about that a little later. They're an electronic rock band, and they had a debut EP called Risen, came out in 2017, charted at number 37 on the Billboard Indie Charts, which is awesome. And you guys have another EP now, correct?
Yeah, The Haunting just came out about 2 months ago.
Awesome. And he's also performed guitar duties and acted as MD for Finnish goth rockers. I'm gonna fuck this up. Save me.
The singer of band called 69 Eyes. They're playing in Hollywood tonight, and I'm actually going to guest with them tonight for a couple songs. Awesome.
And what is it? Yerky. Sorry, Yerky. Yeah. From 69 Eyes. All those guys are like, that's the capital of the world for goth rock in Finland out there, isn't it?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. And they're looking at putting out a record this year through their label, Cleopatra. Yeah. He also does a lot of charitable work to support pit bulls, and he's got a lovely little pit bull sitting right next to him, a really sweet girl. And he does a lot of voiceover work. So this is a multi-talented man. Ace, thanks so much for your time, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Wow, it was sort of weird to hear. I've never heard that all read back to me like that. So I was sort of sitting like, oh, wow. Oh, and honestly, a lot of that stuff, I was like, I forgot I did that.
Well, that's cool, man. It's too bad I butcher like most of these. I'm like really bad at doing these. I don't know why. I feel like I have marbles in my mouth, man.
That's okay.
Hey, how'd you get into punk initially? And what was the, as a player from your standpoint, what was the best and worst things about the LA punk scene? Because it's pretty robust.
Let's see. I have an older sister. She's 13 years older than me. So when I was probably like 11, 10 or 11, I started developing kind of my own musical tastes, as, you know, kids do. And it was pre-internet, marginally. And so, I just liked an amalgam of stuff that either my mom was playing or I was hearing on K-Rock or I heard my sister play. And it sort of funneled down to a lot of like 50s doo-wop from my mom and Metallica, because they were just, that would have been, if I was 11, that would have been like 1993-ish, 94-ish. Mm-hmm. And so Metallica was everywhere. And then just radio stuff like K-Rock. I remember hearing the Ramones for the first time. And I told my sister, I was like, do you know this sedation song? I want to be sedated.
That's funny, man.
And she kind of pulled me aside and she was like, it's time. And she like took me to the record store and like got me, you know, the Best of the Ramones and like the Damned and some stuff like that. And so, going between that and like playing in a band from that age, I didn't know about genres. So yeah. I liked Megadeth, but I liked the Eagles, but I liked Weezer, but I also liked Pantera, but then I also liked Fats Domino, and then I also liked the Ramones. I just didn't understand the sort of social constructs, I guess, that come along. Like, oh, he's got long hair and likes only Slayer, or, you know, and it wasn't until I got into high school where that became like a thing. So in the years between, I was just sort of fiddling around on a guitar, and I could play some power chords and play like Enter Sandman, and that was it. And, and then I started going to shows. I'm trying to make this real quick. Started going to shows and, you know, backyard parties and stuff like that. And I sort of found myself immersed in, and by that point, I think I moved to San Diego when I was about 14. Okay. So I kind of had to start over socially speaking.
What was that? And, like your whole family moved or what?
Yeah. My mom, my stepdad, I lived here in Los Angeles until then. And my stepdad and my mom moved me to San Diego. Hmm. And then, and so down there was, you know, it was the late 90s. And so there was like that sort of pop punk scene was going on, like Blink-182, yeah. Unwritten Law, who I would play for later, POD. I don't know. All these.
That was a good band. Kind of, I like them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like these radio rock kind of bands and pop punk, I guess. I don't know what else to call it. You know, it was before Fall Out Boy, but that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Newfound Glory, all these bands and whatever. And so, I would go to shows like that, and I started sort of, I guess, networking, and you know, I started a band, and within 6 months of starting a band, we were opening for larger national acts. And
oh, wow.
I got to open for the Misfits in the first 8 months of my music career. And
okay, time out. What the hell was that like? You got to have some interesting stories from that.
Other than I'm not going to say who, but other than a guy in the band trying to fuck my girlfriend who was 16, it was just another show.
Just another day. Just rock, another day in rock and roll.
Yeah. I mean, the Misfits at the end of the day are probably my, not my favorite band in the sense that I listen to them every day, but like just, you know, that whole, you know, you're a New York guy. So that whole Glenn Danzig, Misfits, Samhain, Danzig catalog. I mean, John Christ from Danzig is probably my top three, top five guitar players. Mm. And now is like, you know, I wouldn't say a good friend, but I mean, like, he's a friend.
That's cool.
You know? So, and same thing with Doyle from the Misfits. I kind of work on my MO is if I have your phone number and we talk on the regular, we're friends.
Yeah. You know, that's reasonable.
So, you know, so for me to have like people that I grew up idolizing that'll like shoot me a text like, "Hey bro, how's your week?" I'm like, "Whoa, okay." or like even my last exchange with John Christ was like, you know, he was kind of having me give Tracy Guns a raz. You know, he was like, "Tell Tracy, you know, if he wants to get guitar lessons, he can call me," or something funny. No, he was being. Back to the 80s, and he was telling him Tracy had sold him a guitar, and he goes, "Tell Tracy his guitar's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something like that." And not Hall of Fame, excuse me, Hard Rock. Wow, there's a huge difference there, but.
There are people that go to these Hard Rocks and probably think that is Hall of, you know, if you're from a little town in, I don't know, somewhere, and you go there, you probably think you're, you know, and it happens to be in New York or San Diego or LA or whatever.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you didn't know any better, you'd think it was the same thing. But so I'm getting way off topic. So these guys, you know, I'm happy to have as, you know, as friends now or whatever, without sounding like I'm name dropping all over the place. But, so I started a band. We did a show with the Misfits. That was a big deal for me. And we just started doing shows with, you know, as they call them, national acts. Mm. And so I befriended a guy in San Diego that I'm still friends with. His name's John Pebsworth. He had a band called Buck 09 that was on a major label and that was kind of well known. They were like a ska, pop punk, dance, ska kind of band. Mm-hmm. And he was, in his off time, was the talent buyer at a local venue. And so my band kind of became the go-to, like, "Hey, we've got punk rock band X," not the band X, but just whatever, the band blank coming to town. And we want to make sure that, you know, if they only draw 75 to 150 people, we want to make sure that there's another additional 50 to 150 people there. And the band that I was sang for and play guitar in was doing so well that we, at, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a month would play a show, and our attendance, our numbers were anywhere between, you know, 50 and $120, $150.
That's nice for a young band.
At 17 years old, which is I can be kind of judgmental, if you will, or harsh on, and touring full time now as an adult, when I see these local bands that get on shows and I pop my head out into the crowd and there's like 12 people watching them and everybody else is either fucked off or gone to the bar or whatever. I feel like, if you're going to open for a band or whatever, and you're going to have a band, you should be able to draw 20 people, 50 people, 100 people. And a couple times we've had bands. I remember vividly this one show where there was hundreds of people, and I was like, "Oh, great crowd tonight." This is with Faster Pussycat, and the local band was done, and then everyone left. I went up to the singer, and I was like, "Hey, man, that, you know, good job." And he was like, "Oh, thanks. You know, we're kind of like the local hometown heroes." And I was like, "No, that's great. I was that guy once too. And you did your job. I commend you," you know, rather than like, you know, these guys that just sort of promoters throw the 7 bands on the bill opening and each band draws 11 people or 4 people or no people. I feel like those bands just need to stay in the garage. I feel like if you're, no matter how good or not good you are, if you can't, especially in this day and age, draw 20, 30 or 40 people to come see you, then I kind of have to sort of pass a little bit of a judgment. And this, I sound like a dick, but coming from the era where I cut my teeth, where I built a career out of being known for having to hustle and draw bands. Hell, I just ran into a girl who had a punk band 2 weeks ago I hadn't seen in 18 years. She had a band from New York called The Relics. And she goes, oh, I remember that show. And she came with a buddy of mine that I've been friends with this whole time, this guy Kerry Martinez from the US Bombs, that again, another guy I looked up to that years later I'd be in his band. And I was like, yeah. And she was talking about the show. And I was like, yeah, they put us on your show to make sure there were 100 people there. And we did that. And so, you know, again, now I'm on my little soapbox, but, you know, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of what I was able to do between 17 and 19 as a kid with just, you know, there were .coms, but there was no social media or anything. I was out old school tactics, you know, like passing out flyers and handing out cassettes and making posters and drilling it. And so that was how I got gigs. That's how I ended up in a band with a record deal, and how I started touring was because, in a period of about 6 months, right when I finished high school, right after I turned 19 or before I turned 19, around then 18, 19, I had three bands that, two of them I ended up playing for, that were all known that I liked in the punk rock scene, all basically say, hey, we need a guitar player. Can you do it? You know, hey, that kid from San Diego, what's he up to? And it was a band called The Generators that I was in off and on for about 6 years. And then Madcap that I joined when I was 19. And then another band called One Man Army that doesn't exist anymore that I went, you know, and auditioned for and all this stuff. And it happened kind of quick. I don't even know what the question was anymore, but.
Best and worst parts of the punk scene.
Oh, man.
From a musician's perspective.
The worst, Jesus, I went way off the topic there.
It's all good, man. It's just chill. It's fine.
The best parts are the sort of a lot of genres are like this, but I liked the sort of family aspect, like everybody knows everybody kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, I would say the worst part, you know, a lot of sort of, you know, it was clicky and, you know, yeah, it was a little too clicky for me, and I kind of outgrew it. You know, it's funny, I've kind of come full circle where, like, I've gotten really heavily, I've always collected vinyl even since I was a kid before it was in vogue, if you will.
Sure.
But, I've gone through sort of the last 2 years where I've just been buying vinyl like crazy.
Really?
And I would say 75% of the stuff I purchase is only punk rock. And it's like stuff that I only listened to when I was a teenager. So I've sort of gone back into this weird renaissance of like getting back into what I listened to when I was a kid. And it's kind of fun to
go
back.
That's cool, man.
It does what music does, is it takes you back to that point in time. And so, that's been fun for me, but it doesn't mean that I want to start going to the shows or like get back to sort of the social circle of that scene. And it's funny how I'll run into people that I knew 15 years ago or whatever. Again, some of the stuff, anytime I mention someone, I feel like I'm name dropping, but I guess it doesn't matter. But I ran into Tim Armstrong from Rancid about a year ago, and I hadn't seen or spoken to him in maybe 15 years. And he was like, dude, I know you from somewhere. And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, remember 15 years ago? It's like trying to connect the dots. And then I just saw a buddy of mine I used to be in a band with. Do you remember that punk band Fear? You ever heard of Fear?
I might have. I don't know off the top of my head. Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
That's a very like I could imagine a dozen bands being called Fear.
Well, okay, Guns N' Roses covered them on Spaghetti Incident.
Oh, so yeah, what was the song?
I Don't Care About You. I think
I know that album was really good. I love that album.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, but. To like a guy I was in a band with is now playing in Fear. And so I ran into him maybe 3 months ago, and you know, you haven't seen someone in 10 years, and it's like, dude, you know, and it's like, you're in LA Guns now. I'm like, dude, you're in Fear now, you know. It's cool, nice, man, to reconnect, but just from a safe distance, I guess. Like, I'm not trying to like get entrenched in any music scene's sort of social aspects anymore. I'm a grown up now where I don't care about going out partying after shows kind of thing.
Yeah.
But But that got kind of old, and as a guitar player, I just was ready to expand. I remember telling people, I was like, oh, I traded in Stiff Little Fingers for Thin Lizzy, and I traded in the Misfits for Alice Cooper, and as far as guitar players go, you know, yeah. I was able to master all those Ramones and Dead Kennedys riffs and stuff when I was 17, 18, and now I wanted to learn, you know, arpeggios and, you know, minor pentatonic nonsense and all that stuff. And that's what I did I started listening to more rock bands. And when I was in my early to mid 20s, I actively tried to sort of leave the punk scene and get into the rock scene. And I succeeded at that, but that's actually where Kevin Cipriano comes in Kevin Baum.
Yeah.
You mentioned that band Charlie and the Ballantine Killers. And I was in this sort of well-known punk band called the US Bombs at the time. And my booking agent was a guy named Charlie Overby. And Charlie Overby had a band in the 80s called Big Bang Babies. And they're known for, as a guitar player, have you ever heard of a guy named Kerry Kelly?
No, man. I feel like it's not the, from Night Ranger?
Yeah. Yes. So KK's a buddy of mine. KK was in, his first band was Big Bang Babies. So, and then he was in Alice Cooper and Rat and LA Guns and like an 80s band, you name it, he's been in the band. So Charlie has roots in the 80s rock scene and, or whatever you want to call it, hair metal scene. And so I was maybe 23, 24. And so my booking agent goes, dude, what are you doing in this punk rock shit? He goes, you look cool and, you know, you should be in a rock band. And I said, well, sure. And he goes, well, I have this sort of outlaw country band called the Valentine Killers. And it's got Brian Forsyth from Kix. It's got Chad Stewart from Faster Pussycat on drums. We've got Jerry Montano from Danzig and Hell Yeah on bass. And my buddy Kevin on guitar. And we need another guitar player.
Oh, so Kevin was the other guitar player.
Yeah. And so I came in, and that was, long story short, how I got into Faster Pussycat. And how I met Jerry Montano, and we did a record together. And the guy that produced that is the guy that brought me in for that Michael Jackson session that you mentioned with
networking, man.
Networking. So, and a plethora of other things. I'm doing a jam this weekend. I'm doing the Ride for Ronnie cancer event that Eddie Trunk's hosting, Ronnie James Dio, every year. And I think this will be my fourth one I'm involved with. I can't remember, fourth or fifth. One of which I did a set with Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses. I've played with him a bunch, but a charitable event. So I'm playing this weekend, and ironically, I'm playing with two guys that I haven't played with since this era with the Jerry Montano thing. We had a singer named Dewey Bragg, and our drummer was Mike Dupke, not Charlie and the Valentine Killers, but because the Valentine Killers thing starts splitting off into other opportunities. Jerry brought me in and said, oh, I'm starting my own band. And he brought in this guy Dewey on vocals, and he brought in a guy named Mark Zavon on guitar, and he brought in Mike Dupke from Wasp on drums. And that band eventually became a project called Kill Devil Hill that had, what's his name? A piece of
Vinny or Carmine?
Vinny.
Yeah.
Is it a piece or Apice?
Whatever. I think it's Apice.
Apice, had Vinny on drums, and then who took Mike Dupke's place, and then whatever else. So this project sort of turned into Kill Devil Hill, and same thing with Mark Zavon on guitar. And so now this weekend I'm playing with the drummer and the singer of what was the sort of pre-incarnation of that band. Guys I haven't played with in 10 years. But I'm, again, getting way off topic. I'm good at ranting and rambling. But so... those guys, Jerry, blah, 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 the solo record, Michael Jackson through that, the session that is. And then I met Chad Stewart, who at the time was in Tracy Gunn's version of LA Guns, and then also playing Faster Pussycat. And then a couple, maybe 2 years later, they needed a guitar player. I was 26. That sounds right. And they brought me in, and that's how I joined Faster Pussycat. So it kind of came out of the punk rock scene and you know, and I've sort of done my 10 years now with Pussycat, and I've jammed with LA Guns guys in various incarnations a bunch over the last 10 years, whether it was Phil's lineup or touring with Tracy Pussycat Tour with Tracy and Jizzy Pearl and that lineup of LA Guns. And, you know, and now I've become the guy where, you know, like, I won't, doesn't mention, you know, merit mentioning anybody, but, you know, other bands from this genre will hit me up occasionally. I feel like I'm like the sort of young, I'm not young by any means, but like, younger.
Wait a minute. So is this a frame of reference?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you're talking about guys that are all 45 to 60,
yeah,
you know, I I'm sort of the young blood guitar player go-to guy occasionally,
which is great, man.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think it's great. I'm happy to sort of bring, I like to say it's like the punk rock, energy.
Yeah, totally.
To these bands. And the cool thing about Pussycat and LA Guns is they both have a lot of punk rock elements to them. And none of them are, for example, I wouldn't go on the record with this or whatever, so I won't say the name, but I was playing in a project with a drummer of a well-known hair metal band, 80s, a big one. And the guy was like, "Hey, do you want to audition for this? The band, you know, is going to do some shows." And it's all the guitar player is like a Eddie Van Halen, you know, you would know him. It's a name guy. And I was like, "I can't play that stuff, dude. I'm like Johnny Thunders and Chuck Berry. And, you know, my drummer for Faster Pussycat says I play like Slash if he had two broken hands."
Nice. So,
thanks, Chad.
Is that a backhand? That's a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, it's just the backhanded part. But yeah. But like, stylistically, like, that's my style.
Yeah.
I can't do sweep or, you know, arpeggios and whatever. So, I know my wheelhouse. But for Pussycat and LA Guns, you know, it works for me because it does have that sort of Motorhead, punk rock, New York Dolls element, you know, from a guitar standpoint that I'm able to, replicate or have, you know, grasp as a player. And it works. And both bands have had players that go back to the sort of punk rock scene anyhow, like the first drummer in LA Guns, Nicky Beat, was in the Cramps and a band called the Gun Club. I mean, fuck, I'm wearing a Cramps t-shirt.
I love
right
the
now.
Cramps, man. I was trying to get Lux on the show a while back.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, he's been passed for a while now, but
no, not Lux.
Ivy.
Sorry. Poison Ivy.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, that would be great. She's pretty much a recluse now.
That's what I was told. That's why I kind of had to abandon that.
But if you could get her on, that would be awesome. That would be an episode I would definitely listen to for sure. Intently. But, so now that I've sort of gone from punk rock ethos to my entire career in a nutshell,
it's all good, man. What? Who has more tattoos, you or Tracy? That's like the only silly question I hope to ask.
Tracy's pretty tattooed, but I have way more tattoos than Tracy.
Yeah, I think so.
He's got a couple on his chest and a couple on his back or whatever. But like, I mean, you know, my legs are all covered.
Wow.
And I've got a full suit. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So
you are like really tatted.
Yeah. So like my whole,
I have nothing. I feel like ashamed even talking to you. I don't have any tattoos. I went to the gym one day and I was like, I was the only person who didn't have tattoos and a beard. It was in the afternoon. It was like young guys were there. And I was like, oh, well, man, you do a lot of voiceover. I didn't realize that. How did you get involved? Well, like, how did that start? What are you doing voiceovers for?
It's funny. I was trying to not multitask here, put my phone down, but I got this email from a casting agent just now about a thing on Saturday. I haven't booked anything that's worth mentioning. I've done a couple, like regional campaign stuff and, web content and just kind of menial stuff. You know, when I was a kid, I think I hit puberty when I was like 6 months old. I remember being like a kid and everyone was like, "Do you want to play handball?" And I was, you know, "Yeah, that sounds fun." And so, you know, there's that joke, you know, my mom always says I had a face for radio. So, I don't know. And I used to do prank calls when I was a kid, like different voices and stuff. And my mom would always, make me do voices for her. You know, she'd be like, do the one thing. And so, yeah, I really want to do animation is sort of like, if someone could said, you know, you could, what's your dream gig or whatever, I would say, oh, do cartoon characters. But, I haven't actually done anything in that realm. I've auditioned for stuff, here and there. And I actually, you're familiar with That Metal Show, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually know the guy who ran it, That Metal Gear, that was related to That Metal Gear as well. That was VH1.
Yeah.
Do you ever hear of a guy named Ben Smith from the Brought Low?
No.
He was a guy I interviewed. He's in a punk. He started out in the punk. Funny enough, he started out in the punk, in New York City punk, and then he has a really good band now called the Brought Low. They're like a psychedelic stoner band. But he did all the interviews for That Metal Gear, which was a spinoff of That Metal Show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that Metal Gear Show or whatever. I know that, but I don't know the guy by name. But Don Jameson from That Metal Show and myself and a couple other people actually came up with we were working on a cartoon about 2 years ago that we were shopping around town, and I was set to do a bunch of the voices for that. And anyways, so if anyone's listening, that's sort of my dream gig.
But do you like listening to your voice? Like, do you like listening to yourself?
I don't. I think I don't like listening to my speaking voice. Yeah. So I usually don't listen to anything. Like every day when I'm forced to sound check and they're like, you know, okay. Then I'm on the mic for, you know, 45 seconds. I don't care for it, but I do understand the context that when I hear my demo reel of like me doing a reading copy or script or whatever you want to hear it. I go, oh yeah, that does sound like someone that would be doing commercials or whatever. But I had an agent for a minute and I was going out for a lot of big stuff and I didn't book anything and I got really frustrated and I think my agent got frustrated and kind of gave me an ultimatum as far as the gig or working, and I had a tour to do and I went on tour and I just never came back to it. So that was about 2 years ago. So I'm trying to kind of get back into it. I actually just met with a friend yesterday who is working for a casting agent and is bringing me in for some stuff. Hence that email I was just mentioning that I've got an audition this weekend. And so I would like to do more in that realm. I really would like to do more character driven stuff. I have my reels are online. They're on my .com on acevonjohnson.com. However, my website's down at the moment. So, if you go to that and it's down, I would just suggest Googling, or searching Ace Von Johnson voiceover, and then SoundCloud, and any combination of those words, it'll come up. There's a SoundCloud page for my voiceover. Not that I expect anybody to really go hunt it down, but it's out there. So yeah.
I asked you that question because a lot of times I get emails, people say, I really love your voice, and I cringe if I hear myself speak for literally, like when I have to edit this, I literally cringe just listening to myself.
I'm very much in line with you, and I understand it. Funny enough, when I first heard your first podcast, sort of doing my homework, if you will, I was like, oh, this guy's got a great speaking voice. He should be doing voiceover.
Well, you have a really good voice. That's what when I found out you're doing voiceovers, that's what I thought. Funny enough, I was like, oh, I can see why the guy's got a good speaking voice.
You should look into that. But I don't have a pot to piss in that industry. And it's the equivalent of going, oh, I want to be an actor. Oh, okay.
Isn't it? I mean, there's got to be a jillion people trying to do voiceovers, no?
It's hard to break into. I had a few opportunities to cut a few corners. I studied under a few people. I did a couple, like I said, a couple campaigns. I did a thing for this company called Yukon Title Pawn. What was it? Yukon Title Pawn. We'll be there for you when you need us or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
There you go, man.
And, you know, that kind of stuff. I can't remember anything because it's actually been a couple years since I've booked, but, yeah, that's just, I'm kind of throwing it out there in the universe. That's what I want to do. I want to do more of that. I'm working on a television show concept right now that you and I talked about before, you know, off air, if you will, that I don't really want to get into too much because concept wise, and I don't want to jinx it, but I'm hoping to, in a nutshell, I'm hoping to parlay that into more voiceover work. So, yeah, so that's kind of it. Nothing, there's really nothing out there. It's not like I did Cartoon Network or Family Guy or anything, household name. You know, I have friends that have, I mean, a good friend of mine, a couple friends of mine have been on big stuff like that, where I'm always like, hey man, like, you know,
let me join your band.
Yeah. Hook a brother up, dude. But, yeah, that's it. It's definitely a hard industry to crack into.
It seems like becoming an athlete, like a million people. How many kids or people want to play baseball or football or basketball? It would seem like that kind of a thing, because the perception is, oh, I can make money sitting in my house. Or, you know, I would imagine the perception of doing well in a lot of industries is that it's easy, which is never true, because you can't do well at anything and it's easy. That's not congruent. It doesn't fucking happen. You know, it's not,
I mean, a lot of people think it's just one of those things where, you know, you get a microphone, you get like a nice USB mic for your laptop and stuff and go from there. And you can apply yourself, and there's websites out there like VoiceCasters and Voice 1, sure, 2, 3 and stuff like that you can go on and sort of independently look for little side gigs and stuff. And that's great. And I did that for a minute. And, but you have to hustle. But, you know, ultimately what I'm after is work, is like a creative outlet. You know, that's also, you know, like if someone said, hey, we're going to hire you to do this main character on the next season of Family Guy, but, you know, and of course this isn't a real thing, but you can't tour anymore, I'd be like, I'm out, you know, because I would have more fun doing, you know, that stuff creatively, you know, for a time being, because, you know, I'll never stop playing music. And of course, like I just said, that's not a realistic thing. I mean, you can do voice work from anywhere. That's sure. The cool thing about it. But, I am, you know, looking at the long term, the big picture of stuff, where I'm like, okay, how many more years of my life am I going to spend on tour? You know, like I made that joke earlier. It's like, how much of my life do I have to be in a bus or a van or a RV or a rickshaw or the back of a skateboard, you know, in Duluth or Sheboygan or Poughkeepsie or Bangkok or wherever, before I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I've had enough.
Right. Right.
And, you know, as I've gotten older, I mean, there's guys older than me that are just getting their first, you know, like legit gigs, or they're getting a record deal, or they're joining an established act, or they're joining a nostalgia act, or whatever it is. And I feel like, I'm proud of all the stuff I've done, and I've done, you know, enough. I'm not a lot, you know, I'm not in Metallica or something like that, but I've definitely.
Yeah. But that's not a reasonable gauge of whether someone's successful. I mean, that's like saying, well, you know, I have a business, but you know, it's not like the iPhone or anything. I mean, seriously, I mean, but people do that, you know, and they're like, but most people earn a comfortable living doing something that's not like the iPhone, you know?
No, of course. And I've made a comfortable living. I was getting trolled on the internet the other day. Someone was telling me to go back to my job flipping burgers. And I was like,
wow,
I live in a one bedroom.
Why would someone do that, man?
Oh, we'll come back to that. But I was like, I live in a one bedroom apartment in Hollywood. Yeah. It's expensive. And I live here by myself, and I own a car, and I have a savings account. And I was like, who the fuck is this? Some guy on the internet to try to belittle me like that. I hate these people, but that's.
So you grew up first in LA, then in San Diego. What was your childhood like overall?
Oh man. I don't know. Not bad, not great. It was better. I don't know, man. I was like raised by the single parent. You know, I live with my mom. She worked like three jobs, like that whole thing. She wasn't around like a whole lot, but she did her best. I definitely had to grow up kind of quickly. I remember, I think I was like 7 or 8, and my mom basically said, do you feel like you need a babysitter anymore? Cause I think it was probably eating away at her finances. And, I said no, but then I remember being like alone she would leave for work at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening and then come back at 3 in the morning.
Holy shit.
And so I was kind of alone and I was left with my own devices, which wasn't a bad thing, but I mean, I was, you know, doing that sort of, you know, pre-internet, you know, like probably like your childhood, like out playing in the dirt and, you know, finding trouble and smoking doobies and whatever nonsense kids do when they're 10 years old and left to their own devices without one of these fucking iPhone things in their hand. And, you know, I remember, you know, you found like porno under the overpass and like, you know, magazines that is.
Were you only child?
I have an older half sister.
Yeah, you said the sister's 13 years older.
Yeah. So, but in all intents and purposes, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't live with my sister until I was an adult, in my early 20s, I should say. But yeah, so I was an only child and parents were divorced when I was like 5 minutes old. My parents are both passed now. And so, you know, I feel like it's been very much a lot of my life has been sort of like, you know, I take care of myself, which sort of goes back to that whole, like, you know, some guy sort of talking shit, telling me I work at McDonald's. I'm like, even if I worked at McDonald's when I wasn't on tour, who the fuck are you to have an opinion? You judge me for that.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, or someone said something like, oh, his parents pay their way or whatever. I'm like, nobody pays my way. I work my ass off, you know? So, and I, you know, I'm a little, you know, it's a little struck a nerve there kind of thing, but
sure.
You know, most people my age or even older, you know, like I don't really know anybody my age, you know, that has a similar background, you know, like most of my friends have a parent or they have both their parents or their parents are still married or whatever it is, you know? So my upbringing was, I think, relatively unique, you know, not by any crazy standards, but it definitely wasn't, you know, mom and dad and blah, blah, blah. And I was fortunate enough when I was about 12 or 13, where I did have my own identity already, but my mom met a really nice guy and they got married and then he sold a company and then they started doing well. We moved to San Diego and blah, blah, blah. And so my high school years were a little more,
less stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, we had a nice house and they, you know, he bought my mom a nice car and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I remember being a kid and, you know, we, for a while we're on like food stamps and like, you know, I remember one year for my birthday, my mom took me to, like, you know, when you go to a thrift store, like Salvation Army,
sure,
and they've got like a bucket full of, like, you know, used toys or whatever. And it's like, what, like, you know, pick any toy for 50 cents kind of thing. I remember having my birthday gift was like, you know, you can pick out any toy you want. And when you, even for me, I'm like, man, that's so indicative of like how we were doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have a niece and I have a goddaughter and I spoil them. You know, I bought my,
your sister's kids.
Yeah. And I have an older stepbrother who's got kids as well. But, you know, for my close family, I mean, like, I bought my 11-year-old niece one for her 10th birthday. I bought her $400 Les Paul.
Holy crap. That's a really nice gift, man.
She can play. You know, but I'm just doing
really nice. Well, you're probably like, you know, you probably know what it feels like to not have that. So it probably makes you feel good to say, hey, man, I didn't do this, but I could do this for somebody else and make them feel good. I totally get that, man.
100%.
I totally get that.
But in relation to that for a birthday gift versus, like, you know, like, I remember what it was. It was a Ninja Turtle. You know, I remember I got this Ninja Turtle and I was like, you know, that was my birthday gift, you know? And so in comparison, I was like, man, you know, now that I'm an adult, my parents are gone, everything. I was like, man, that was how we lived, was like, you know, and I remember stuff like that, like childhood stuff like that, like my mom crying that she couldn't do more for me and all these things. So, you know, and without going too deep, I mean, like, there are elements of my childhood that were not positive. And then there are elements of my childhood, I think the reason a lot of it's bled into my adult life and my career or my sort of work ethos or whatever, you know, like, I didn't have a lot of toys. I didn't have the things I wanted, for example. And so I made them, you know. I remember I had a box full of garbage. I had a box full of trash and I don't think I've ever talked about this publicly, but it was literally, you know, like, you know, when you buy strawberries and they come in that little green, like, bucket,
sure,
like stuff, not trash like sardine cans, but like stuff like that, that could be, you know, rinsed and
repurposed,
that turned into a fort for a G.I. Joe or, you know, and stuff like that. But that was, I had a box, like a big box of stuff like that. That was like what I, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of subbed out the lack of having.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's, I didn't have the Ninja Turtle playset, so instead I made one out of a cardboard box and you know, trash, you know.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I think that's probably less more common than you think, as far as like not having money and doing stuff like that, to be honest with you. The problem is, and I get this because I had an abysmal childhood, there's things that linger from there that you don't really know what's normal and what's not normal, because overall the whole thing was pretty fucked up. So you really have no idea of, your frame of reference is not normal in the first place. So it makes it a challenge.
My frame of reference was odd too, because it's strange. I actually just went here with my girlfriend because we played a show in the same little area of the valley here in Los Angeles, a place called Agora. And it's funny, Agora is a really nice, like equestrian, really wealthy people. And it's funny, there's this one hill. It's a block. You couldn't call it the ghetto of Agora, because that's laughable. it's like the only part of the town where there's condos or apartments or like sort of a couple little rundown places. And that's where I lived. So a lot of the kids I was friends with, we lived in a really nice area, but we still lived in like the fucking poor part of that town.
Yeah.
So a lot of my friends when I was a kid, like lived in these big houses and had all the, you know, I remember not being jealous, but like none of my friends came to my place to play. I went to their place to play, 'cause they had all the play sets and toys and everything you could think of. And they'd come to my place and it would be like, oh, you're playing with like a styrofoam box and a, you know, the thing that the paper towels come in, the tube.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and it was cool, like, actually. I don't have any negative spin on that.
Yeah.
I just, in hindsight, feel like, you know, wow, like, you know, my, you know, it's sort of, I guess what I'm taking from that now is like sort of my creative drive to be like, you know, whether it's, I don't even know what an analogy would be, but like, you know, if I need to make more money, I have to create things to, you know, fulfill that. So, right. You know, whether it's like doing my own merch, and branding and stuff like that, which is, I do. And as how I have, you know, been able to, you know, in my off time, I could not be on tour for 2 months and I'm still generating, you know, X amount of dollars every month from a wonderful fan base and from stuff like that. And these outlets is just a creative resource that I, in some direct way, stems from that sort of like, well, I don't have, so how do I create?
I mean, it's hustle, man. Everybody who grows up like that, that's what one of the good things about growing up, for example, in New York City in an area like I did, everybody's, that's a very, you got to hustle, man.
You have to. And I actually, I'm pretty proud of my own art of the hustle, if you will, and some of the stuff, you know, whether it's any of the stuff I've already sort of tooted my own horn about. But I don't know. My childhood was okay. There was some stuff in it that's like definitely not for public consumption that I wouldn't sort of wish on anybody.
Sure.
But you know, as far as like abuse and stuff like that goes, but like, you know, there's nothing I can do about that as an adult. You know, it just is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is. But, you know, I love my mom and my dad, and I wish they were still both here. My dad was pretty cool. He rode motocross and stuff like that. And so, you know, I grew up around in the desert. I was a desert rat with my dad and, you know, like chasing snakes and picking up tarantulas and, you know, collecting skulls and, you know, rabbit, you know, spines and nonsense like that. I actually have a curio behind me back here.
Yeah, I see that. Your place looks pretty cool, actually, man. I like the way it's decorated. I mean, it's like authentic, you know. It's like you can see you're very comfortable there. It's like the shit you like, which is cool, you know.
Yeah, I might spin the camera around for you in a minute, but not that the listeners can hear. But
no, it's got some really cool posters and just
I collect vintage horror movie one sheets, which is another like the Pitbull thing. If I used to start me talking about it, I'll go for 20 minutes, so I won't talk about it at all. But but yeah, so I've got all these vintage horror movie posters. There's a curio behind me that's obscured by my girlfriend's plants that I'm babysitting. But
I see the skulls in there, man.
My exercise bike. But there's a bunch of stuff in there that I've had since I was like 6, 7, 8.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's all I was going to say. Like stuff, you know, like I have a tortoise shell that was, you know, attacked by a bird. It's just got all these holes in it and stuff. But anyways. That's cool. Yeah, so there were stuff in my childhood that I do that was great. That was super great, like that kind of element. And, you know, being around motorcycles all my life. And
you have a motorcycle? Do you ride?
I don't. No, I don't think I would ever own a motorcycle in Los Angeles. I think it's too dangerous.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I had he was like a bro. He was like my big brother. His name was James Murray. I would say, look him up. He was an engineer and a producer. He did pretty much any nu metal album in the early aughts, like Disturbed and Drowning Pool and all that stuff. He did all that stuff. He was the guy that brought me in to do that Michael Jackson session. He died in a motorcycle accident. Someone ran a light and hit him in an intersection about a mile from here. Actually, yeah, right up the street, really. And he died instantly. And I miss him. And so that's the kind of thing, which is why I would never own a bike here. I've ridden a bike since I was about 16 or 17 that I can remember. Maybe I have. It doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
You know, I have a Tamey from Pussycat Rides and, you know, a lot of my buddies, Gilby Clark rides, a lot of the guys I hang with have bikes. If I lived in Nashville or somewhere, you know, a little more remote.
Hey man, Nashville's cluttered as hell, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. Like more countrified where you could relax and not have to worry about getting plowed over.
Yeah. I only say that cause that's kind of where I'm trying to slowly prepare to relocate to is,
Let me tell you, Nashville's wonderful. The people there are so – this show started there. I probably interviewed 100 guys in Nashville, but it's really nice people, but it's really crowded now. You got to go 20 minutes out to get some peace and quiet.
Well, check it out. Nashville, of all places, I mean, I guess it makes sense, outside of Los Angeles, somehow turned into – and I'm being sort of, you know, making it about me here, but – whenever I'm in Nashville, every time I'm there, I run into 4 more people I didn't realize that I know that live there.
Absolutely.
And so I'm actually going there in 2 weeks from today because my girlfriend, who's also a musician, is touring through there.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm going to go visit her on the road there, but I'm going to go bring a bunch of my Nashville family to her show because I want a lot of my friends that are basically family to me. I want them to meet my girlfriend.
That's cool, man.
So, I could have gone and visited her in Chicago or New York or somewhere like that, but I want to do it in Nashville because I know so many people there. And the fact that we're kind of discussing eventually ending up out there.
It's great there, man. Do you know Ray Luger?
I'm
sure you do.
Not very well, but yeah.
Yeah. I interviewed Ray. He's a great guy, but he lives like about 25 minutes out because you can get so much more proper. I mean, it's so crowded there. I mean, you literally can't get around anymore.
Well, for what I pay for this apartment.
Oh my God. You get a house. Easy. You get a 2000 square foot house.
Easy. Easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I'm looking to do is I've got a savings. So I'm looking to drop, you know, a certain amount as a down, down payment. And then make it where my mortgage would be, would in theory be less than what I'm paying for this one, you know, bedroom here in Hollywood.
It won't be in theory. It'll be in practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that's my sort of adult game plan over the next maybe 2 years. But there are so many people out there. I can't even I list them all. How many, I'd be name dropping again, all these musicians that are my fucking bros that I just, you know,
you probably know Walter Eno.
I know Walter. Yeah,
yeah. I interviewed Walter. He's in kind of like your scene a little bit. You know, he dabbles in a bunch of things, but he's in that. Yeah, I interviewed him out there, and he just moved. Wait a minute, he just moved there. I think.
Just moved there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was his really funny because not to get off you, but he had the funniest thing is he had this photo of all his guitar cases outside his house, and his girlfriend said, "Are we moving or going on tour?" It was really, it was quite funny. It was just like really appropriate. So, sorry, man, I didn't mean to take.
Oh no, attention. I don't care. Walter's a great dude.
Really nice guy.
Yeah, there are. Without naming names, there are so many awesome people out there. Yeah. Not just players, but just people in general. Mm-hmm. I'm actually really excited at the prospect of relocating out there, but for a multitude of reasons. But I don't even know where I'm going with this whole Nashville thing. But
it's all. I'll ask you another question.
Sure. But anyways, if you live in Nashville and you know me, I love you.
Let's talk about guitar or gear for just a little bit, man. You've got some really nice looking guitars. What's your like go to? Not for like that you have to play, but the one you like playing the most. And what other two guitars would round out your top three?
My number one is my 87 Gibson Les Paul Custom. It's done pretty much every session I've done over the last maybe 12 plus years. I'm trying to think how old I was when I acquired it, maybe 23. So it's 13 years. Mm. It's just the most comfortable guitar I have. It's pretty versatile.
It's heavy. If 87 has got to be heavy, right? Yeah.
It is a heavy piece of wood, and I come with a pre-existing back injury, so it lets me know that it's there, if you will. And that's my baby. It's definitely due for a fret job. I'm a Gibson guy through and through. Mm-hmm. I've been a Les Paul guy since I was a kid. The first electric guitar I ever bought myself was like a piece of junk thrift store guitar, but my mom for my 17th birthday got me a kind of low end junior.
That's really cool. So,
which I still have.
Yeah.
So,
that's good. That's good that you have that.
So, actually I think I have a buddy of mine has it right now, like lent it out, but you know how it is when you have so many pieces of equipment, it's like, it doesn't do me any good sitting in my storage unit. I just assume let someone borrow it or
whatever. I totally get it.
But, my custom's my number one. I love it. I swear by it. Gibson as a brand, I think is more recently really getting back on track with like, just as far as like a brand goes.
God, I hope so.
Having some insight, I don't know that I constitute as a Gibson artist. Tracy is, and Tracy is now working with Gibson and definitely Epiphone. And I think sort of by default coming sort of on his coattails. So I'm really honored and happy to be building a relationship with some people there at not only Epiphone, but at Gibson as well. Todd at Gibson, I'm afraid to pronounce his name wrong. It starts with an H, so I just will call him Todd. But he's like, dude, come by. You know, they're on Sunset. He's like, come by, take whatever you want. And I'm like, what do you mean take whatever I want? You know, and they just have this great sort of family vibe. And Al John at Epiphone in Nashville, same thing. That's cool, you know, man. And it's so humbling to me as, you know, I kind of call myself a hack. And so it's sort of humbling to have these guys at these companies that I've, you know, looked up to my whole life to be like, you know, I could send them a text and be like, hey man, can I come by and pick up a 335 for the week? You know,
that's great, man.
Is really humbling. And it like makes me blush. Like I'm just happy to have that.
Well, you earned it. It's not like it's free.
No, you're right. You're right. I definitely fucking earned it after all.
I can't go in there and do that. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You earned it, you know?
Fair enough. I guess, you know,
I would if I could.
I wouldn't blame you. I have a hard time sort of accepting some of the stuff that's a reality for me sometimes, like without sort of dismissing myself or being sort of a little bit self-deprecative. So like a lot of the stuff, whether it's big or small, like I'm kind of like, oh yeah, I don't know. I guess I, you know, yeah, whatever.
Just say thank you. So that's it.
I think it's a normal quality to have. I guess it's better than being like, yeah, look how fucking great I am. But although I definitely feel like I've done a little bit of that on this podcast too. So I shouldn't talk. But
no, I don't think you've done any of that.
Going back to the question an hour ago, yeah, Gibson, my custom is my number one. I have a guitar that was custom made for me about 3 years ago by a guy named Billy Rowe, and his company is called Rock and Roll Relics. And I recommend any guitar nerd looking them up, especially or gear guru or whatever the, you know, kind of terminology slang is. A lot of guys are probably already familiar with his company, Rock and Roll Relics. He's done stuff for, God, Joe Perry and
is that Billy the Brown? It looks like it's a Les Paul style guitar you have. It's got like inlays or something in the on the face of the guitar itself.
I think what you're thinking of is the Ouija board guitar.
And
I'll come back to that. No, the one that he made me is the American flag, black and white looking guitar that I guess has become sort of, I'm looking for a picture here while I'm on the horn here with you, has become kind of synonymous with me a little bit because it's a one of a kind. I don't know if you can see this picture here.
Yeah. So it's a black Les Paul. Wow. That's really cool. You know what I like about it? The pickup cover on the top and not on the bottom. It kind of gives it a,
yes.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. It fits in with the whole flag the way it is. So let me just describe it. It's just like Ace said, it's a black and white flag, American flag and the stars are in the upper left, which is, imagine if you're looking at the guitar and it's laid down in front of you with the bottom of the guitar on the left and the neck sticking out on the right. Did I describe that right? Yeah. It's a really cool looking.
Yeah. Cool. And it's actually based on a model from the same company from Rock and Roll Relics from Gilby Clark from Guns N' Roses. It was his image and they did it as a Tele and it was his signature model, which I think has since been retired. I may be wrong there, but and I asked Billy from Rock and Roll Relics, who's also a friend of mine for a while. He plays in a band called Jet Boy from the same era as Pussycat and LA Guns. But I think now he's more known for his company, Rock and Roll Relics. But, you know, he's built guitars for everybody. And I think the reason he started was, now he's a full, you know, he's like a luthier. He makes them himself. But he was relicking guitars for people for a really long time. Actually learned a lot from him. I was actually relicking a guitar last night, which if you're bored enough, I'll pull out of the case behind me. But I asked him, I said, hey, have you ever thought about doing that Gilby flag as a Les Paul? And he said, oh, I'm going to do it as a junior. And I said, cool. Well, you know, I'm not really a big junior guy, but is there any way I could commission you to do it as just like a standard? So he did it as a one-off for me. And
that's,
I asked
cool.
Gilby, I said, hey, do you mind if I sort of steal your flag motif? And he was like, no, you know, Gilby's like one of the nicest guys in rock and roll.
God, you know what? Honestly, if someone said yes, you'd really kind of have to be a dick. No, you cannot use my motif. Like, it's fucking probably sitting in a case under his bed or something. And like,
yeah.
But, I mean, I know, I appreciate what you did. It was not, you do like respectful, but like,
yeah.
Who would have said no? I mean, the guy that would have said no, that's going to stay under my bed and no. collecting dust and nobody, that would have been a dick move, but no, you did the right thing.
It would have. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't going to bum him out, because if someone did that to me and didn't say anything to me and did the exact same, like the Ouija board guitar, and then did it like right after me, I'd be like, oh,
well that's honestly, man, the burden from a business perspective is on Billy to clear that up. Not you.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I just wanted, but he's a good friend of mine, Gilby, that is. And so I just wanted to make sure I wasn't like stepping on his dick, if you will.
Yeah, sure.
So that's kind of my other main guitar. And then I had a company, a guy named Anthony out of New Jersey with a company called Black 35, make me that Ouija board guitar, which is actually, a couple people compared it to Kirk Hammett. He's got that, ESP Ouija guitar, but Kirk's is white print on black, and it glows in the dark, which is awesome, but it's a decal, whereas mine is a wood burn.
Yours is carved in there, right?
It's wood burned. So it's a Les Paul. So, I mean, yeah, it's still a Ouija board, but it's a completely different looking guitar.
What kind of pickups are in there?
I don't know off the top of my
head. Is it Gibson's or is it somebody else? If you don't even know.
They're hand wound by some guy that works with Anthony at Black 35, and I'm losing points not knowing. I'm super not techie. Like, I'm not a big gearhead. I'm very much like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Sure.
Which is why I'm like Marshall, Les Paul, cry and go.
Yeah, yeah.
But the pickups that are in the Rock and Roll Relics are David Allen's, and he made those to my specifications to sort of match what was in my the custom, which is JB's. I'm not sure exactly what. I know they're Duncan's because everything
the Jeff Beck's.
Yeah. And again, I'm also a huge, I'm a big Jeff Beck fan too. And when I, at home, I only play with my hands or fingers, I should say. But, until that, the David Allen, I only ever put, Duncans in my guitars. And then now that I've got stuff being like custom made for me, a lot of these guys, like for example, the Ouija board, he was like, well, I work with this company, so I would prefer to use my guys.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, you're making it for me. I just said, if you could have it sort of tonally match maybe the JB's, like what his version.
Yeah,
of his,
yeah, sure. That makes sense.
So, but I offhand, I can't remember what the pickups are. I'm sure Anthony will scold me for it later, but.
No, I mean, he'll be thrilled that you're mentioning it on here. Are you crazy?
Yeah. Black 35 guitars. So
there,
yeah,
you go.
Those were both custom made for me. So, and I like that, you know, I like that I'm on stage with something that you can't just walk in a guitar store.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. And that is a gorgeous guitar. So I would encourage everybody to check out Ace, some photos of him, the Ouija. That's really one off. That's a very different guitar. It looks really cool.
Thank you. Yeah.
Music, man. Top Desert Island Disc, top three. Just your knee jerk reaction. No, just for right now. I mean, not, you know, I could ask you this question later. It'd be a different.
Hotel California, Welcome to My Nightmare from Cooper, and something from Glenn Danzig's catalog. I don't know, like Static Age from the Misfits or the first Danzig record or something like that.
You covered all your bases there, man.
Yeah, kind of.
Very much. Was Steve Hunter on that, Welcome to My Nightmare?
He sure was, yeah.
I think he's coming on my show. And yeah.
Awesome.
I'm pretty sure.
Tell him I'm a big fan. You don't.
Yeah.
He knows me, but I am just such a huge fan of his playing. Yeah. He did a solo on, I think, one of the most recent Alice Cooper records. And it is, I can't remember the song. Oh, it's called I Am Made of You. And the guitar solo just gives, I just got goosebumps. It's very Steve Hunter. I'm not going to take that away from him. But I was going to say, I heard in your interview with Chris that you're a big
Gilmore
fan.
Yeah, huge.
Definitely got some Gilmore vibe to it. And of course, and this solo that I'm specifically talking about is just, it's got that vibe, and it's very Steve Hunter. But if I had to compare it to someone else, I would say Gilmore, but
I wrote it down.
Just gives fucking goosebumps.
You know, I've interviewed Gilmore's bass player and his drummer. And
yeah.
I asked Guy Pratt, his bass player. He's been playing with him since they basically, the band split up. I think Tony Levin played one record, and then it's been Guy ever since. And I said, Guy, you know, I would just be like a 13-year-old, you know, if I could have David on my show. You think, is that ever possible? He goes, no. He goes, that'll never happen. And
yeah,
he said, he said, I mean, he doesn't need to do need press. To do, he doesn't need to do. He's David Gill, but he's also a quiet, reclusive sort of guy. I wouldn't say he's reclusive. He's, you know, you never see him. Like he said, Roger might come on, and I said, what about Beck? He goes, Beck might come on, but David would not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see Roger Waters doing something like this. I feel like Gill would see.
No. But I, you know, that's my sort of like, Beck
if we were to do a top 10 Desert Island, Wish You Were Here would be in the. I don't think it would make my top five, but it would definitely make my top 10.
That's a great record, man.
But yeah, Steve Hunter, man. Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I just started speaking with him, and you know, I spoke with him and his wife, and they were really interested, which is cool. So, and I was really interested, of course. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music, Ace?
I feel like all of them kind of came up at one point or another. I mean, I try to do as much stuff for rescue that I can, whether it's, you know, I've gone to a few events here and on tour, and I have a social media account where all I do is just promote dogs looking for homes.
That's really nice of you, man.
Thanks. I just feel like I try to sort of use the little bit of platform I have to do something beyond just the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing, you know?
You don't seem like a sex, drugs, and rock and roll guy, to be honest with you.
I do or don't.
No, you do not. You don't. I mean, maybe, I don't know. See, this is like really interesting. I get the best of everybody. And so people say, Craig, you know, do you realize that people may not be like that in real life, like you're getting the best? And I'm like, you know what? I don't give a shit, because it's a lot. I've had the worst of everybody in my life. I'm 55. So I'll take the best, even if it may not be like, that's how the person is all the time. I don't care. It's a great thing to sit and have like good vibes with somebody on a nice conversation. And I don't care if it's even phony, which I don't believe is, I'm not saying you or any of, I don't believe anybody's being phony, but yeah. It's a different, you know, it's almost like, you know, no one's going to come on here and like, you know, be a dick. It's an interview, you know.
If anything, I feel like I've done myself not a disservice, but like a, I think I've been so candid here chatting with you that I feel like it's sort of it's sort of taken away from the sort of mystique that people may have.
The mystique? No, you don't seem like a sex, drugs, and rock and roll guy at all, remotely. I'm sure like you partied like everybody else did when you were younger, but it seems like you're pretty focused. You got an exercise bike in your freaking apartment there, dude. It's not there because, you know, you're burning off beer calories. You know, you're staying in shape. You're in good shape. You know, you seem like you take care of yourself. You know, you seem like you have a good level of awareness. You know, like everybody else, you're trying to figure shit out like we all are, you know, work in progress. I mean, to me, you don't seem like a sex, drugs, and rock and roll guy.
Oh, no, not. I just sort of use that because it's just an easy reference. I think a lot of people,
you're in those kinds of bands.
That's my point. Yeah like you're in those bands. And yeah. So when they hear I'm not like doing bumps of cocaine in the rainbow bathroom every day or whatever, or like sleeping with strippers all week, it's like, I feel like I'm letting somebody down somewhere or something. And I'm like, I'd actually rather talk about advocacy for pit bulls and like and Obscurvance and Price movies then.
You can't do the sex, rock and roll, and drugs and rock and roll thing and be a professional musician nowadays. I mean, I'm sure there's a few guys that get away with it that are at a certain level already, but you can't make money and be that guy anymore.
No,
not for very long.
And I would say you're correct as far as the business goes, but also, you know, with social media and stuff like that now, I mean, you know, if you had a bad bender one night, it's going to end up on some, you know, metal sludge or something like that. So it's just,
well, that's what Luke was really upset about. He said, you know, he was really remorseful. He goes, look, I was really fucked up for a very long time. The booze is out of control. There's so much bad shit out there about me and I'm embarrassed and I wish I could take it away, you know, but like, I think everybody's got their demons about things they didn't want to do or wish this was different. And all you could do is, for me, in my mind, cause I've had plenty of my own, is, you know, try to be a good person today. I mean, I can't fix the past. I can just do a better job moving forward, you know?
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. I think, let's see how much, you know, without getting off the topic too much. When my mom, ran a soup kitchen at a shelter in San Diego. So I spent a lot of time volunteering there with her when I was younger. So
that's a really nice thing that she did. Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, you know, my mom's, like I said, she's passed. And so, and it's been so long that I'm not even sure, presumably that there's, wow. Presumably the thing is still there. I think I don't even know if I want to give him a shout out, but, or whatever, but, I think it was called the North County Interfaith something. And it was just a shelter, and people went there that were down on their luck, and we bagged food and hygiene items and stuff for them. And a lot of it was against my will, and a lot of it was on my own fruition. So, you know, sometimes I wanted to go and sometimes I didn't want to go, and sometimes my mom dragged me along and I didn't want to, and sometimes I would just go on my own will. But what I'm getting at is, I think that
it's a good lesson of compassion, though, to come from the top like that. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that sort of mindset is what, when, as soon as I started getting any sort of, I don't know what the term would be, like attention or platform or anything. And it's not like I'm not Steve Vai or anybody. And I'm not talking about, I'm making light of that, but skill wise, but I'm saying like, as far as like household name or whatever. But as soon as I started getting, you know, people that,
someone's paying attention to what you're saying. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So as soon as that happened, I was eager to use that platform to, you know, give something back. And it took me, you know, and I've done a lot of things that I guess I wouldn't publicly go out and go like, look at me, I did this. But for example, and I will say this because it just happened, I've I've participated in, I don't know how many, but five of these Rock Against MS, these MS benefits yearly. And a month ago, they just gave me this this really nice award, this big, you know, platinum record. Thank you for participating in however many years. And it was a really nice gesture. But, you know, I had an aunt who had who died of MS. So, wow. And I have a friend who has MS. So for me to participate in these things in when I'm not working, it's not a problem for me at all. Or this weekend, I'm doing the Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah.
Cancer event. My mom had cancer. So it's like for me to do anything and give back in any capacity whatsoever when I have the time, my answer is always yes.
That's really cool.
Even to my, sometimes without sounding curt, even sometimes to my own detriment, when I'm trying to learn eight songs for four jams in 3 days, you know, I'm like stressing myself out, but I'm happy because, you know, ultimately I was given the opportunity and I'm happy to be returning the gesture or whatever. And I'm getting long winded in here, but
no, it's rant. Listen, man, that is, I think, like a really respectable acts of kindness are what merely everybody needs to do a little more for themselves.
I wish more people with a platform, you know, my size and tenfold would do more stuff. I feel like maybe just with social media, I'm seeing a lot more people be proactive in the more recently, but, and it doesn't do any service to name names, but there are people out there that are huge, rock stars and famous people or athletes or actors or whatever, and they don't do shit. And, or maybe they do it behind closed doors. I don't know, but I feel like, and I'm not asking everybody to be fucking Bono, but I'm pretty public with my, you know, my participation, for example, this weekend, the Dio event, or especially, you know, you heard me go off on a rant about the Pitbull thing. And if you look at any of my social media, a substantial part of it is me sharing or referring or connecting people or advocating or whatever it is. And, you know, I've had a couple people sort of push back and I'm like, dude, that's what I do. If you don't like it, don't follow me. But,
push back. Cause you're,
yeah, like people that are like, oh, I followed you because I thought it would be all sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and all you're doing is reposting dogs in kennels looking for homes. And I'm like, well, fuck off, you know?
Yeah. So, and you know, if I'm following you, you should do what I want. Exactly. I'm giving you the blessing of being followed by me.
It's the same thing, and I don't want to go open a can of worms
No.
But it's the same context, and I am going to say this because it pisses me off to no end. It's the same thing when, and I'm not going to get into politics at all, but it's the same thing when people, if I say anything like, oh, I think this guy said that and that's wrong or morally corrupt, or this guy's an idiot, when people go, shut up and play your music, I don't want to hear about what you have to say. I go, well, check it out, man. I go, I don't come to your fucking job and knock the dick out of your mouth. Yeah. I have the platform that I have because I work my ass off for it. And if I want to say I disagree with this person or I agree with this person or I'm advocating or whatever the antithesis of that is, that's my right in my platform to say that, you know, and this whole mindset of, you know, and I'll use Nikki Sixx. I see people, he'll say something, whether it's politics or just his opinion on anything. And I'm not a Motley fan by any means, but I admire his openness or opinion, his ability to state his opinion, just matter of fact, I admire that. But I'll see people that are like, shut up and play, just shut up and play music. It's like, dude, well, why don't you shut up and be a plumber? Why don't you shut up and flip burgers? If everybody went with that, one of the great upsides of social media is that everybody does get to have an opinion and say what they want. You know, sometimes that's the Antichrist, but that's not neither here nor there. But it infuriates me when people tell me or anybody, you know, you should, you know, I'm not here to hear about Jack Black's political standpoint. I'm here because I want him to be funny and hear about his movies. Well, then don't follow him. Fuck off.
Right.
So, what do I do outside of music? I'm very opinionated. And I try to draw attention to stuff that I think are good causes, whether it's me participating in, you know, these benefits, or whether it's, you know, recommending people check out their local shelters or their local rescue, or talking about Rebecca Corey and Stand Up for Pits, or Deirdre and Pinups for Pitbulls, or whatever, or any of these people that I'm friends with and that are great organizations, whether it's dog rescue or you know, humanitarian work, or whether it's Billy and Rock and Roll Relics. I spend a lot of my time with my girlfriend. You know, I've been with her. We've been together about 6 months now. I'm really happy. She's a wonderful person. She's also a musician. So when we're both not on tour, that's like a treat.
That's cool.
If you have a person that you have chemistry with, I think as I've gotten older, that's probably the most important thing you can have. And then family and friends after that, you know.
Of course.
I really feel strongly about that.
I have a really great network of friends in Los Angeles and Nashville and all over the world. And with that comes my friends who come to town, and I spend a lot of time, or I was, I think now that I'm not going out drinking as much as I was when, not because I was single, but just because I'm spending most of my free time with my significant other rather than just bar hopping. I spend a lot of time at you familiar with the Rainbow Bar and Grill?
I've heard of it. Yeah. I literally know nothing about LA. I'm just an East Coast dude. It's weird.
Kind of the rock and roll Mecca in Hollywood. Like Zeppelin used to hang out there in the 70s. Guns N' Roses kind of put it on the map in the 80s.
So you'll be just sitting there having a drink. You'll meet a load of your buddies just happenstance, or guys that you know from other guys.
Exactly.
That's kind of cool, actually.
If you were to go into Hollywood and try to find me somewhere, I'd be at the Rainbow. That's cool. They gave me a table. If you go in there, table number one has a bronze.
Dude, if I go there, I'm going to go. Yeah. I'm going to say I need table number one.
Yeah, just go in.
I'm just kidding. I wouldn't even know where the fuck it was.
It's on the strip. It's right in the middle of the strip. And so it's the kind of thing where like I never would have seen it coming, but you know, they were like, it was just the table I always asked for. And after that's 10 cool, years, man. They were like, that's your table.
Awesome.
So
would they even let me in? I'm like an old white dude with no tattoos and no beard. I'm in good shape. That's the only thing I have going for me. and apparently I have a good voice.
The Rainbow has the best Italian food and Mexican food. Some of the best Mexican food.
Oh, that's cool.
In all of Southern California. And I've been going there for ages. So that's kind of where
that's cool.
my stomping grounds. So I hang out there when I'm, you know, kind of thirsty, if you will, and try to stay proactive with any, you know, the dog stuff. And I'm a big horror movie advocate. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole either, but I love horror movies. I grew up watching them. My dad put me in front of them when I was a little boy, and it just went from there. I mean, like my whole apartment is like, you know, you can see all
the posters are really cool. I like that.
There's one.
Yeah, I saw that one before. That was really cool.
They're just everywhere. Like, I don't have anything music related other than my record collection. That's visible. Cool. Other than it's like all horror movie stuff. So, you know, I collect posters and I like to watch movies and be a nerd, you know, and that's kind of
it's not very rock and roll, Ace.
Yeah. horror movies and rock and roll and heavy metal are totally synonymous. No, so I'm it kind of works, you know, you look. Look at Black Sabbath and Glenn Danzig and Alice Cooper. But I already forgot what the question was. What do I do when I'm not touring and stuff?
No, that's hobbies. That's kind of, man.
I'm a nerd, you know.
Two more questions. This one's tough, actually. Toughest decision you've had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do?
I don't know, man. One of them is something that you and I've already discussed, but, that's like personal or whatever, but, off the air. And, I'm trying to think, I think making the decision that this was what I was going to continue to do, which kind of ties into the whole, like, how dare some guy talk shit on me on some social media thing. I mean, yeah, he's got the right to, but it's like, if people knew the amount of fucking heartbreak and sacrifice and, you know, tiny violin bullshit, you know, for me stuff that comes, dude, I've been homeless, I think 3 times in my life solely because I chose to continue to be a career musician, you know, and when you're, does that answer the question kind of?
And I think that's a really good answer. And I think that in general, people don't realize how hard it is to become excellent in anything.
Yeah.
You've really got to be willing to eat a lot of fucking crow and like
daily,
just dig in incredibly deep.
I remember my mother and my grandmother both, I was probably in my early 20s. I was probably under 22, 19 to 22. And I remember both, you know, motherly figures, my grandmother and my mother, that is, being like, you know, how much longer are you going to do this for? You know, when are you going to grow up and cut your hair and get a job and stop acting like a jerk and all this nonsense? And I was certain that I could make it work for me. I just didn't know in what capacity. And I remember I was 23 and I was living in a house with the singer of a punk band that I grew up loving. And I'm not going to say who, cause I don't want it to sound like I'm insulting him, but I remember and I'm still a huge fan. I'm still really close with them, he and the band. But, I just remember sort of, you know, seeing him struggle and being like, for that, when I was playing in these punk bands, I was like, man, I thought this guy, like, you know, would have like, you know, a nice car and own a house. And instead it was like he and his wife and his aunt and me all living in this one house. And I remember being like, there was nothing wrong with it. I mean, we lived in a house in Los Angeles, but I just felt like what I thought as a kid was going to be these guys that own mansions were guys that were living kind of like how I live now. And so, which was when I was like, I need to be more proactive to, you know, or this won't work for me.
And you need to look at it like a business.
It's completely a business, yeah. You know, unfortunately. And
that doesn't mean you can't be a great musician and put your music first. But if you're not looking at how can I earn income through this and do multiple things like merch and other things, that you ain't going to be around, man. That's just real. You need a plan B and C and D. You know, you're not sitting in one band. You got two or three projects going on any given month. You know,
I don't even know how many bands I'm in technically. Right. I think I have five bands right now or seven or so. I don't know.
But you got that's what you got to do to make your business work if you want to play that guitar.
You have to. And then also like the merchandise aspect and the branding aspect and the social media.
And the voiceovers.
Yeah. And then, yeah, going beyond just music, you know, voiceover and working on this sort of TV concept thing I mentioned and, you know, these other avenues, you have to do other things. And I'm happy to do all the things as long as I'm still able to play music and make a living. So now I don't even know where I was going with this.
No,
but
you're good.
You know, I'm grateful for the opportunities I've had. And I'm sort of a little self-righteous at times with how far I've taken it, because there were a lot of people that, you know, gave up or couldn't, you know, cut through the thick of it or still, you know, I have friends that are doing what I do and no judgment, but they live at home, you know, my age, older, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, but like
no, but it's not wrong with it, but you're not,
but A, I'm not, B, I personally could never do that. And C, you know, like I mentioned, I don't have,
where are you going to live with?
Yeah. What am I going to live with, my dead mom? It doesn't work that way.
Last question. Sure. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been intentional and how much is just a fact of, you know, a part of aging?
Biggest change. I don't know. Kind of just growing up a bit. I don't know. I think I was definitely a lot more reckless 10 years ago. I mean, as everybody goes from their 20s to their 30s. I think it wasn't it's hard to say 60-40, not by choice. Yeah. I think, you know, doing kind of tying into what I was with the last thing saying, it's like doing what I do and making the decision to do this. You know, I wasn't in college when I got my first opportunity. So I dropped out of school and then never kind of went back. More or less. And I think turning this into a career, which I've done, forced me to grow up in the sense of like, you know, I have to look at everything in like, you know, I can't just be like, oh, we're going on tour. Fuck yeah. I have to be like, okay, is that financially viable? How do I do this?
What am I walking away with at the end versus the opportunity cost of what am I missing while I'm gone?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when every time I go on tour, more or less, someone dies, has a baby, gets married, the dog gets sick, you know, all these other sort of elements that occur as life goes on, it no longer becomes about, you know, it's, I had this sort of quick interaction with a fan the other day, and I don't remember what his statement was, but I remember my response was, dude, you know, the context is weird, but I said, you know, there's 22 and a half hours out of the day where I do think not just be the grinder box monkey on stage, you know? And so I love what I do, but more often than not, or whatever percentage you want to look at it, there are people that said, like, I'm not some autonomous fucking drone that just gets on stage and plays rock star guy all day. Yeah. You know, like, if my girlfriend dumps me, or my mom is dying of cancer, or the dog gets mauled by a bigger dog, these are all things that I've had to deal with and then get on fucking stage and still do my perform. You know, those are elements that get, you know, people oversee or get neglected or overlooked or whatever. And it's in the last sort of 10 years, I've learned how to handle those things differently and better. Because life, as you know, has a tendency to be chaotic at times. Mm-hmm. Especially when you least expect it. So, you know, handling myself and being a person who has struggled off and on with depression, and the fact that, you know, I'm a working musician, I'm an artist or whatever you want to call it, but it's like, yeah. There are so many other facets that go into my life to make it move forward, enable me to get up and be on stage in the first place. I'm not like a Luke or whoever, or a Vi or Tracy, or these guys that had these record deals or sold all these records or are famous or whatever, where they've got all this, you know, presumably this influx of money, you know, or whatever. I mean, I very much live hand to mouth. I mean, I might be able to do a tour and be good for 3 months at a time, but there's no, oh, I'm going to take 12 months off. You know, it's like I have to continue to work, and I have to continue to come up with, you know, whether it's roadie for a day, meet and greet, or selling merchandise, or my Depop store, or I'm selling old stage clothes, or guitar lessons online, or whatever, these outlets that I have to create. And I would say those things over the last 10 years are stuff that I've learned how to enable myself and better myself and not make it where, you know, oh, I'm just going on tour to have fun and fuck girls and play rock and roll and get drunk. It's now a business. And it's very important to me that the concert, I have to deliver not a product, but like, I have to get up there and play a great show. I want everyone to be like, wow, you kicked my ass, you know, because that, and then in turn turns into, at the end of the day, it you know, moves my own business forward and my stock or value or whatever you want to call it. And that, those are things that I didn't look at 10 years ago. And then that in turn makes me want to work harder and makes me feel better about myself. And if I don't, for example, you said the exercise bike or whatever, I go to the gym 2 or 3, 4 times a week, or, you know, lift dumbbells for 45 minutes like I did yesterday or whatever the hell it is, I feel better about myself. And then I want to work harder, and then I want to do better. And instead of sitting around at the bar drinking and looking like shit and feeling like shit and being depressed.
Yeah.
That's the sort of difference over 10 years. 10 years ago, you know, I, through a myriad of relationships, you know, whether it's friends or band relationships or business, or mostly, you know, I'm talking about girlfriends and stuff like that, letting people make me feel less than. And so now, even I learned a lot in my most recent breakup that we touched on a few minutes ago from, you know, over the summer. It was a big learning curve, and that brought me back to a point that I hadn't been at in 10 years. So it, like I had mentioned, it was very dehumanizing. So I learned a lot, not to compare it to hitting like rock bottom, but it was interesting to sort of revisit a mindset that I hadn't visited in 7, 8, 10, 12 years, from having somebody have so much sort of power over me, and then kind of fighting my way from that bottom point up. I mean, I was, you know, I mean, whatever the worst mental scenario you can think of was where I was at. So like, you know, having someone go from being your best friend and your partner and your lover and the woman that I thought I was going to spend presumably the rest of my life with, basically treat me like I was, you know, just write me off completely, make me feel like I was worthless. I had to sort of better myself for that. I think that's the kind of thing that I was incapable of grasping or handling in such a, in the way that I did, even 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. I would have just self-destructed further, which, you know, to some degree I, you know, went through, some, but instead I went and bought, like a beach cruiser, and I got a personal trainer, and I changed my diet, and which I've now since gone back to not changing my diet, but that's neither here nor there.
But, got you through the hump, man. That's all.
And I started hiking a bunch, and, I stayed single and didn't get involved with anybody for a while until I met someone that I thought is the person, my girlfriend now, who is just the most amazing person. And, you know, of course, who knows where that, you know, 2 years from now, I could be saying the same thing about her. You don't know. But for right now, you know, I'm just happy to be where I'm at, and to kind of come back from, to bounce back from some of the things that I've endured in my life, whether it's childhood shit or personal stuff or relationship stuff or band stuff. And I don't think the way I handle things now, I have the foresight or insight or any kind of sight, a skill set, if you will, to handle the way I do now. With maybe one or two exceptions, I feel like over the last maybe 6 months, I'm a much happier and more sort of stable person than I was 2 years ago, and then that more so than 2 years before that, and 10 years, you know, looking back to 10 years ago. So, but it's, that's sort of like just life, you know. It's like we were talking personal stuff too. It's like, yeah, you're not the person you were, talking about like your 20s and personal stuff then.
No,
you know, of course you've learned and you grow.
Thank God.
Exactly. That's how I feel. Like I'm so, you know, what is it like, you know, if you're going through hell, keep going, yeah, and all these like sort of, you know, insert eye roll here, life, yeah, state. Yeah. You don't really see it when you're dealing with it at the time, because you're just in the thick of it. I mean, I've been, you know, like even like I've lived in my car several times in my life, you know, and like just been like, you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You know, like, I, you know, do I kill myself? Do I go try to get a job at McDonald's or something like that?
Sure, sure.
You know, but you persevere. And so those are things, you know, again, on my little soapbox here, like I've done those things. So some people that might not have been through those things, that's why, you know, I'm opinionated, or why I have no problem telling some guy in a message board or whatever to go fuck himself when he thinks he can try to belittle me or whatever. It's like, really? Well, what's your story, random guy on the internet that no one gets?
Random guy on the internet.
You know, it's like, you know, nobody's doing, no one, you're not on anybody's fucking radar, so who are you to judge me? But anyways, that's kind of it on my rant.
No, you're good, dude. I gotta tell you, first of all, thank you very much for all your time. Thank you for, yeah, being so honest. You're a very nice, very thoughtful guy, and I really appreciate all your sincerity, man. Thank you. No, seriously, you're a really, thank you, very Craig, thoughtful person. Let me tell people where they could find you. First of all, the new album, Ace has got a new album out with LA Guns called The Devil You Know, and you guys you just came back from a tour?
Yeah, I just got home a week ago.
You're going to be – when's the next time LA Guns is going out?
We have intermittent dates and a couple short runs through the summer, and then some dates with Tom Kiefer from Cinderella.
Oh, cool.
In the like, I don't know what that would be, September. I guess that's like fall.
You coming down here?
I don't know. A lot of it's still being booked. So, sure. And then Faster Pussycat has a lengthy summer tour.
Very cool.
So, you know, that we'll be out for the summer or whatever. And then, yes. Neon Coven.
Yeah. Neon Coven, the new EP.
Yeah, The Haunting, yep. And it's more contemporary than the other two projects, sort of electronic rock. And then,
Is that available everywhere? Records are streamed, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff?
Yeah. The Neon Coven stuff is digital only, so there's no physical product yet. But if you have Spotify or iTunes or whatever, I don't know what the kids are using nowadays, but it's on all the digital outlets. It's definitely on everything. So yeah, Neon Coven. And then Yerky from the 69 Eyes, we're going to do another solo record. I'm actually going to see him tonight, where I'll be performing with some guest songs with the 69 Eyes. And that's really it, you know, just trying to pick up more voiceover work. And
good luck on your audition, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
That's cool. We'll see how it goes this weekend. You mentioned lessons. Do you do lessons, online Skype lessons?
Guitar lessons?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
How do people get a hold of you for that? Like social media or Instagram? Or?
Yeah, social media. Or, you know, my email is acevonjohnson@icloud.com.
Okay.
So they can just email me direct. I've never had a lesson in my life. So my approach is definitely not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not sort of the normal stock lesson. Usually I've given a couple lessons of guys that can play circles around me. So it's interesting where we're sort of learning from each other rather than me actually giving a lesson. I don't think I'm in any position to even be giving guitar lessons. I think it mostly stems from people just want to kind of pick my brain or take a lesson because I'm Guy from such and such band.
That's okay. That's great. You know, if they find out how you're doing something and it helps their playing, great.
Exactly. So I'm happy to pass on any information that I have, but I definitely, you know, when it comes to like theory or scales and modes and stuff like that, my knowledge is pretty minimal. You know, I definitely have a punk rock approach to everything, but I do them. I do them occasionally. And I enjoy it. You know, it kind of usually ends up being a good third of it is sort of like this, where it's just sort of like chatting and social rather than like, okay, here's the Phrygian mode, you know?
Yeah. But that's cool that people could do that. And also your social media, which you're pretty active on, and Instagram and Twitter, it's both at Ace Von Johnson, correct?
Yeah. Ace Von Johnson. I have a Facebook like page. I probably put something on it once a month. I don't really care for Facebook. So if you're trying to reach me there, I wouldn't.
There you go. Did I forget anything? Anything I missed?
No, that's really it. I just, you know, usually tell people, I say, if you're thinking about getting a dog, I always tell people to get a rescue from anybody nearby. You know, hug a pit bull, pick up a record, listen to music, try to be a nicer person. And, you know, that's it.
Perfect, man. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Ace, thank you very much for your time. Honestly, you're a very thoughtful guy, and I'm really glad we got to connect.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for coming on. Let me know if I can help you with anything. Please check out and support Ace's music out there. LA Guns, the new album is The Devil You Know. They will be touring. Instagram and Twitter, Ace Von Johnson. Neon Coven, the new EP is called The Haunting. Check that out. If you're looking for guitar lessons from a real rock and roll star, hit up Ace on his social media channels or acevonjohnson@icloud.com. And make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. And I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.